Welcome back, America. Chew Hewitt. That music means it's time for the Hillsdale Dialogue. Once a week, usually the last radio hour of the week, I am joined by Dr. Larry Arnn, the president of Hillsdale College. And all things Hillsdale are found at hillsdale.edu, including an application for your son or daughter. Or if you're a teenager, you can go to the finest institution in America if you just apply and you're good enough and you work hard enough. All of our dialogues are collected at U for Hillsdale, all of their online courses at hillsdale.edu. And usually Dr. Arnn and I talk about history or philosophy or one of the great works, but we're kind of stuck in Switzerland. Dr. Arnn is head of a nonprofit institution that is not partisan, but he's an expert on the Constitution. And today we have, and on American history, we have a set of issues. Dr. Arnn, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm not tested positive for the virus.
The other president has, President Trump. And first of all, I'm praying for him, Melania Hope Hicks, and especially his son, Barron, because he's a teenager. And, you know, teenagers, you've had a few of them. They can neither show fear nor not be afraid. But I think the country shouldn't be afraid either. Lots of presidents have been sick. I was in the White House when Ronald Reagan had colon cancer.
Yeah, I've been reading up on Dwight Eisenhower. Who had a major heart attack, 12 months before the 1956 election. And he was in the hospital for 6 weeks. And then he was reelected, and he had good health in the second term.
Yes, and President Reagan had colon cancer. I was in the White House counsel's office when that occurred. And, of course, the 25th Amendment had never been evoked. So Fred Fielding turned, not to me, surprisingly, but to a young lawyer by the name of Roberts, who's now the Chief Justice, and said, how exactly does this amendment work? And, you know, it's not the clearest amendment in the world, is it, Doctor?
No, it can be simplified, I think. What it does is it's a remarkable addition to the Constitution because it makes the cabinet, as a group, a sort of operating body under the American Constitution. And it amounts to this. The vice president decides the president can't do his job, and so he asks the cabinet, do you agree? And if a majority say yes, then they go to the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate, the Leader of the Senate, and then they inform him that the president can't do his job, and he's out until the president informs them. Those same two people informs them that he is able to do his job now, and then the vice president and the cabinet have 4 days to vote that he's not okay. If that happens, then the House and the Senate, by a majority vote, decide the issue.
There is also, and I want to make sure people understand this, a voluntary use of the acting presidency power, and that's what the future Chief Justice had to write up for Fred Fielding. I still can't believe Fred didn't come to me, but he went to the chief and say, what exactly, how do you give the power away? How do you get it back? Because that's the key thing, Larry Arnn, as you know, once you go under general anesthetic, you've got to be able to reclaim the powers of the presidency when you come out of it. And George H.W. Bush just stayed at the residence and the president woke up and he said the magic words and he got the power back. But it's just not that dramatic. And I personally don't, think this is going to be bad for the president because they diagnosed it early, which is the key.
Yeah, well, we don't know. The people who are vulnerable to the disease, it seems to be, are very vulnerable. And so the president is old and a bit overweight. He's a very big man. He doesn't actually look all that overweight. And so those are comorbidities, and so maybe it'll afflict him, and we'll know soon. But I think you're right. He's beyond healthy. He's good grief. Watch the guy go. So probably he will have a mild case, and you know there's no reason to worry about concealing because you know it's if you get it bad, it's obvious.
Boris Johnson, you know, could no more have concealed his case, so he becomes the second leader of the free world. We have the Chinese Communist Party to thank for this, by the way. I would like to recognize for everyone who watched that debate and the fact that Chris Wallace simply jumped over this fact. They purposefully said nothing as this virus traveled around the world, Dr. Arnn. I don't think we can say that enough.
No. And, you know, it's a virus. It's global. It's going everywhere. They could have done, you know, first of all, it's a closed society. There's nothing special about the way they acted. This is how they act, right? You can't, if you control the press, our press these days doesn't seem to be, need to be controlled, but it controls itself. If you control the press and you control the people, then you can say what you want to. And so, sure enough, you know, I mean, there was stories. Senator Cotton told me a story that they were, when they did a lockdown, that they welded people's doors shut so they couldn't get out.
That's a communist religion. I have a book recommendation for you, Dr. Arn.
Yeah.
I think you will like this. I'm holding it up. It is Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents by Rod Dreher. And it is about soft totalitarianism and hard totalitarianism. And he spent a lot of time with people who emerged from the former Soviet Union and cannot believe the freedom that is taken for granted in our country and the West, and how they believe creeping totalitarianism is arriving in a very soft form in the United States. And they're encouraging people to prepare for it. And I thought of your seminar, and there's a lot about Orwell, and there's a lot about Brave New World, and there's a lot about Darkness at Noon in Rod Dreher's book. He's a very smart man. And I think you will enjoy Live Not by Lies, which, of course, is Solzhenitsyn's injunction to the Soviet people when he was being expelled from the then Soviet Union.
Yeah, I've been reading Solzhenitsyn some, too, lately. Well, you know, what strikes me about these radical movements is their attack on history. And, you know, the doctrine in Aristotle and repeated in Thomas Aquinas is, this alone is not even to God to make what has been not to have been. And that means once a thing is over, its being is complete, and that's reality. The present is very hard to estimate, and we don't know about the future. So the past is our main contact with reality. And it's the specific job of Winston Smith in 1984 to rewrite the past. Every written document that reflects against the constantly changing dictates of the party is rewritten and reprinted. And that means that the account of the past flows like a river in 1984. And that becomes crucial at the end when O'Brien, see, 1984 ends with a remarkable thing in literature. There's a philosophic seminar conducted under torture. And so O'Brien is torturing Winston Smith and instructing him in the fact that there's no reality. And one of the two prime demonstrations of that is the past itself can be changed by the will of human beings.
And so I was up last night reading Rod's book because there's a chapter in there in which he contrasts Orwell's vision of totalitarianism, which you just described, with Huxley's vision in Brave New World, which you and I discussed, and maybe the most remarked upon series of conversations other than our Churchill and Lincoln discussions is your seminar on totalitarianism, which we talked about on the show as it was unfolding. And they have Orwell and Huxley had different visions of how that works. And Huxley, you just drug yourself into sort of a stupor that is happy. And Orwell, as you just said, it's coercion.
See, both. So, first of all, it's an interesting fact that Orwell and Huxley knew each other. Huxley taught Orwell French at Eton College, a K through 12 famous school. And they corresponded late in their lives about who was right. Is the future despotism to work through pain or through pleasure? And they held to their views. Huxley thought he was right. Orwell thought he was right. And, you know, you say soft despotism. It's not so soft, is it? I mean, national disgrace, the interests of regulators, if you fall under that disgrace, you know, it's...
What Rod describes is being exiled from the community, losing your job, losing your status, losing your income, but not being sent to a concentration camp or jail.
It is not relatively soft.
It's relatively soft. And that's what he means, relatively soft. But he believes it's here already. And he believes, and I'm not persuaded yet, that the Christian church can do nothing except pray about this. I haven't gotten to the end of the book, so he may have a different view on this, but obviously prayer is necessary. But I think the problem is primarily one of media, Dr. Arnn. And this debate that we had that Chris Wallace spent defending his role in yesterday is a prime example of elites demanding that they control the discussion. And I reject that.
Yeah, I mean, the debate was an extremely interesting phenomenon. But at one point, Chris Wallace said, if I can keep to my time and keep my voice down, why cannot you? And the response to that is, because I am the president of the United States and the former vice president of the United States, and we are nominated by the two great political parties for the chief office in the land, and you are not, right?
And, yes, you're a paid broadcaster, or as they say in the UK, a newsreader.
Yeah.
But the other thing that Chris, and I like Chris Wallace from a distance, I don't know him, but I was stunned when he told the president, just say it. It was his Candy Crowley moment. He wanted a confession from the president of sorts. Denounce white supremacy right now. The president has done that, I think, at least 10 or 12 times, beginning in 2016. He cannot have been more clear. And then it happened again at the presser. But Chris Wallace said, will you denounce white supremacy? The president said, sure. And they said, just say it. It was a direction to the president of the United States in a debate.
Yeah, and he's... the problem is wide, right? Because my friend Angelo Codavilla has a term that I'm finding increasingly useful. He speaks of the ruling class. And so people who are in the big establishment positions act like they own things that they can't own. You know, the White House press corps is restive and openly critical when President Trump invites some nobody journalist to come in and takes a question from him, because it's like they own that space. But that space is in the White House, and the president is elected to manage it. So it's a very wide thing. And see, if you just look at the reforms that are going on in some states, and maybe widely, to the way we vote, we're going to vote through intermediaries, right? Somebody's going to bring us a ballot, and maybe
dangerous.
They'll bring it to us. And, there's fraud in that. But you can't get information from the candidates for public office except through them.
Yeah. We have to go to a break, and I will encourage you during the break, Dr. Arnn, if you will Google the Israeli voting system, I think they have much to teach us about going home to vote in person. I'll be right back with Dr. Larry Arnn, the Hillsdale Dialogue. Hillsdale.edu is for all things Hillsdale. I get right back here to Dr. Larry Arnn and Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt, the Hillsdale Dialogue, our weekly discussion with Dr. Larry Arnn or one of his colleagues from Hillsdale College about lasting and important things is underway. The news of the morning, of course, is that President Trump has tested positive for COVID, as is the First Lady, as has Hope Hicks. Who knows who else in the White House? It is a virus. It goes everywhere. We pray for his health. We pray for his son, Barron, for his adult children as well. Dr. Arnn, markets, of course, are in a tizzy because they always overreact, and then traders come in and take advantage of them. I just want to repeat, the Constitution is very strong. I think Lincoln taught us that. It's very strong. People don't have to worry about the Constitution.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, there is a reason to worry, and that is it is so widely disrespected as an organized political movement that the fears arise that the parties that don't respect it will abuse it in some way. And, it's in calmer times than these, there have been, and, the Civil War is a less calm time than this one. But in the Civil War and in Eisenhower's illness, right, that's what led to the 25th Amendment. And that's because people were worried, is there an orderly way to transfer power? And so right now the danger, the fear is that there's going to be chaos in the electoral system and also cheating because COVID and because of these massive mail-in ballots. And also, there have been reforms in several states, California is one of them, where somebody can go register for you and bring you a ballot and take your ballot for you. And that's what I call voting through intermediaries.
It's a terrible thing.
Yeah, the direct action of citizens, right? one of the things we're losing, because, you know, if Chris Wallace, you know, you say you like him from afar, I dislike him from afar. if Chris Wallace has the same dignity in that debate as the two candidates, then who appointed him, right? Whereas they have been produced, the president by a national election, Biden as senator and vice president by statewide in one case and national elections in the other, and they've been nominated by the two great political parties. That means massive gathering of public support across the nation has put them on that stage. And so if they don't have authority, then we don't have authority.
And the complaint, Chris Wallace said, is they agreed to these rules. And what you're pointing out is, and then Joe Biden began to break those rules first. He went first and interrupted. And then they began to do what I think American people want, which is talk, sometimes harshly and sharply. It was not Lincoln Douglas. But as you have reminded people, another one of our great series, there was no moderator at Lincoln Douglas.
That's right. And see, you could, you know, a great idea would be to just have it automatically timed and their microphones go off and they each get a period of time to talk and then the other. And so I want to read you something because, you know, preparing for the Hugh Hewitt show, you have to try to remember everything that ever happened at any time because I never know what we're going to talk about. But I looked up articles about Biden and Ryan and his debate, their debate in 2012. And and here's a good thing I have to do it. Fairness requires me to say the New York Times article about that debate is actually excellent, whereas their article about this recent debate, not so good. And it walks a nice line between giving both of them their due. But here's The Guardian, and this is common. The headline is, Joe Biden's alpha male display leaves Paul Ryan overwhelmed in VP debate.
Huh.
And I want to read you one paragraph. On more than one occasion, the Republican candidate visibly gulped. It's dispiriting, of course, that political discourse should have been reduced to such displays of alpha male dominance, but there were times when the debate might have benefited from a whispering David Attenborough. He's the one who... those really great nature programs, Life on Earth. He puts those together,
yes,
and narrates them. Voiceover. And so the victorious older male, having bared his cosmetically enhanced teeth, stalks away muttering, with all due respect, that's a bunch of malarkey. So the truth is, it's probably true that in preparing for this debate, Biden watched that. And Trump watched that. And Joe Biden just ran over Paul Ryan. And you know, that's, you know, lots of the press saluted it. The New York Times, to praise them, was kind of in the middle.
That's very interesting because the president waited. Biden interrupted first. It was in the third exchange, 2 minutes Trump, 2 minutes Biden, back to Trump, Biden interrupts. And after that, you know, if there had been a chair on the stage, it would have gone flying. But Trump was not going to get rolled like our friend Speaker Ryan got rolled. And he got rolled. He got rolled.
Well, Trump is... You know, I watched President Trump speak at the National Archives on Constitution Day, and we were on that panel beforehand. And I had, you know, I have hardly ever been close to Donald Trump, but only spoke to him once in my life. But I was 15 feet away. That's a big, imposing man.
When we come back, I want to talk about that because it is the source of much derision among elites. They don't like him talking about it. I want to talk about critical race theory and what he was doing when Chris Wallace interrupted him. We will continue to talk with Dr. Larry Arnn for the next half hour, and then Leader Mitch McConnell joins me. Go nowhere except the Hillsdale Dialogue and Hillsdale.edu, and here to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. The Hillsdale Dialogue is underway on the Hugh Hewitt Show. I am Hugh Hewitt, inside of the Beltway with my friend, Dr. Larry Arnn, president of Hillsdale College, and he is indeed my friend. Dr. Arnn, we made it through the first half of the Hillsdale Dialogue, begun early today because Senate Majority Leader McConnell has requested the last half hour of the show, and we don't turn him down. We have not yet brought up Amy Coney Barrett. And before we do, I want to play for you Chuck Schumer, the leader of the Democrats, talking to my colleague at MSNBC, Joy Reid, who is, I consider, a friend, saying this exchange, cut number one.
The Senate. We are using all the tactics we can to slow the thing down.
Would that include adding, if the Senate becomes a Democratic majority, adding D.C. and Puerto Rico as states and ending the filibuster?
I would, believe me, on D.C. and Puerto Rico, particularly if Puerto Rico votes for it, D.C. already has voted for it and wants it. I'd love to make them states.
Okay.
And as for the filibuster, I'm not busting my chops to become majority leader, to do very little or nothing. We are going to get a whole lot done. And as I've said, everything is on the table.
Now, I can translate that, Dr. Arnn. That means packing the Supreme Court. It is, in my view, unconstitutional to make the District of Columbia a state. I have reviewed the Federalist Papers on this. I don't think it could be clearer. What do you think of the agenda, the rhetoric, and the reluctance of Joe Biden to answer the question on court packing?
Well, there's a huge energy on the left to reform the electoral system. And it's a great idea to review why that is more important in America than anywhere else. America has what James Madison says is the first simply representative system. And what that means is the people don't actually have the power to do anything except vote. And that is actually the first safeguard in the Constitution. All of the authority is in the people, and they delegate it through elections, and by the way, different constituencies at different times to a government. And the government has to work for the people, but the people can't get all excited and, pass the death penalty for Hugh Hewitt overnight. And so that fine system means that if you tinker with it, right, then you are potentially sealing the people off, the government off from the control of the people. And in the days when Madison wrote that, and for the next 150 years, the government was about 10% of the economy. Well, now it's, depending on how you count, 48 to 52%. And that means the government is a force unto itself. Now, D.C. is where the government is located, right? That's where the people who work for it, that's where they're concentrated. And so giving them the vote changes the status of that district, which was supposed to be a neutral district. And Puerto Rico, the reason they want to add them is because they think they know how they're going to vote. And that's the same thing with these intermediaries carrying ballots around, right? Why can't the people voice their will just through the established institutions, see? And that means their control of the government is filtered.
Because they don't like the answer. They don't like the answer, so they want to change not just the question, but when the question is asked and how it is answered.
And what they're supposed to have to do, this one of the two or three sublimest things in the Federalist Papers is, it's in Madison, and it's that having a big national constituency, large number of people spread across a great area, means that everybody has to adjust and to include everybody, and then we can unite this great sprawling nation, which is the challenge, right? Well, the reforms that are proposed will simply make the urban constituencies dotted around the nation dominant, and then the people who don't live in them, who are a substantial minority of the people, they're effectively going to be disenfranchised. And it's a curious thing, because the great divisions in American politics were sectional, right? That's the South versus the North, for example, sometimes the West versus the East. Today, they'll be dotted all over the country, but it's a set of interests of people who live in urban settings. And that, so that amounts to a change in the constitutional structure.
Which, by the way, you can do. The only thing that may not be amended in the Constitution is the equal representation of states. But there is a process by which to do that. And they could make the District of Columbia a state, but they would have to amend the Constitution. They can't do it legislatively. They can make Puerto Rico a state legislatively. That is actually true. But Honestly, I despair of constitutional ignorance, and I know you have a course at hillsdale.edu on the Constitution. I've been teaching it for 25 years. It's not Kabbalah. It isn't. It is not that. It was written by farmers for farmers, very rich and wealthy, and some of them people who enslaved others. But it is easy to read.
Yeah, and remember, the Constitution is a device for the delegation of authority, sovereignty, and then the gathering from the sovereign people of their will to control the government. That's the effect of the system. That's what it aims for, right? And so if you disturb that, if you concentrate authority in a certain class of person, and see, as I say, this idea of a ruling class is a fruitful idea because there are a bunch of people who have opinions that are antithetical and explicitly and openly so to the opinions around which the Constitution of the United States was written. And so, of course, they want to alter it.
And some of them want to do it by shortcut, via expanding the Supreme Court so that it will act as a legislature and vote the way they want it to. I have been accused of being alarmist about this, but if we begin to expand the court, there is no stopping. Now, it was only done after the Civil War's great convulsion. It was done recklessly by the Reconstruction Republicans. It was changed repeatedly in their jurisdiction. It's what happens when a government is in trouble as it changes its ultimate arbiter of law. And we cannot do that. And yet it's just passed off as another legislative thing. It is a fundamentally destabilizing proposition.
That's right. And you know, the court, I am in the camp that thinks that the power of the courts is overestimated. I follow Hamilton about that, although I realize that in a time like this, when everything is deeply divided, the court can make dramatic intrusions. And my ambition for the court is just that they stop doing that.
Yes.
And let the political process work out.
My ambition for the court is that they protect property rights, free speech, the free exercise of religion, and they rebuke the administrative state when they act like legislatures. Let me talk about Amy Coney Barrett now, who was supposed to have been your commencement speaker. Donald Trump last night gave remarks. He's fine, by the way, thus far, and we hope and pray remains that way, to the Al Smith dinner, which, of course, has to be done remotely. And they're going to propose, by the way, that they cancel the second debate, the left will. They can do it remotely, just as the president did last night. Here's what he said, cut 13.
Now more than ever, our nation needs a renewal of the values this organization promotes and that the Catholic faithful live out each and every day in peace. We love the Catholic people. We love the Catholic religion. And above all, we respect it greatly. As president, I will always support you in your effort to serve our fellow citizens and to lift up all humanity. I will protect the Catholic Church, and I will defend the rights of religious believers of every race, religion, color, and creed.
And let's play the second part, 14.
To protect your God-given rights, I was recently honored to nominate one of our most brilliant legal minds, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, to the United States Supreme Court, and that was an honor indeed. She is a proud graduate of the University of Notre Dame Law School, where her professor, one of the most respected anywhere in the country, said she was the single greatest student he has ever had in his class. We will not stand for any attacks against Judge Barrett's faith. Anti-Catholic bigotry has absolutely no place in the United States of America.
All right, Dr. Arnn, what do you think of that? He went on to say it predominates in the Democratic Party. I didn't mean to cut him off, but I want to give you a full minute to the break.
Well, first of all, she's, you know, a brilliant woman. She's a big favorite around here. I'm the only one at Hillsdale College who's never met her. She's been here three times, and I was always out of town. And she was supposed to be our commencement speaker. We had to delay it. She tried to move her family reunion to a different date and couldn't quite do it. So we didn't. We had somebody else. But one of these days. Anyway, yeah, she's a brilliant woman. And I want to say something about what Trump said. What does the word Catholic mean? It doesn't mean weird people like you. It means encompassing everything, right? And so Trump goes in that remarks you just played from endorsing a particular church, but the Catholic Church, and its service to all humanity, right?
Yes,
Trump says things like that all the time.
And we're going to come back and finish the Hillsdale Dialogue by talking about why that is not reported more. Dr. Larry Arnn is my guest. All things Hillsdale, found at hillsdale.edu. Hillsdale.edu, and if you're smart and you're a teenager, you'll apply to go there. Stay tuned, America.
Now more than ever, our nation needs a renewal of the values this organization promotes and that the Catholic faithful live out each and every day in peace. We love the Catholic people. We love the Catholic religion. And above all, we respect it greatly. As president, I will always support you in your effort to serve our fellow citizens and to lift up all humanity. I will protect the Catholic Church, and I will defend the rights of religious believers of every race, religion, color, and creed. To protect your God-given rights, I was recently honored to nominate one of our most brilliant legal minds, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, to the United States Supreme Court, and that was an honor indeed. She is a proud graduate of the University of Notre Dame Law School, where her professor, one of the most respected anywhere in the country, said she was the single greatest student he has ever had in his class. We will not stand for any attacks against Judge Barrett's faith. Anti-Catholic bigotry has absolutely no place in the United States of America. It predominates in the Democrat Party, and we must do something immediately about it, like a Republican win, and let's make it a really big one.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. The Hillsdale Dialogue is concluding. That was President Donald Trump in his videotape message to the virtual Al Smith dinner last night, a tradition in election years. Dr. Larry Arnn is my guest, president of Hillsdale College. You had begun to opine on what the president said. We've already heard you talk about Judge Barrett, soon to be Justice Barrett. What is the significance of the president's remarks last night?
Well, first of all, we talked about this once before, and I don't have the exact numbers here, but I think 19 times in an election year there's been a vacancy on the Supreme Court, and 11 of those were when the Senate and the president's...
May I correct you?
Hands.
19 times when the president and the Senate were of the same party, 17 of those 19 times the nominee was confirmed.
That's right. And it's a constitutional power, which makes it a constitutional duty. And so, of course, they're going to do it. And your next guest, I'll say a word for him, because he was very precise over Merrick Garland about whether they would confirm somebody with Obama in power in the Senate in Republican hands. And he mentioned this very fact, that the custom is that the Constitution says if he nominates somebody and they confirm him, he's in. But that's almost never happened when the two were in different, the presidency and the Senate were in different hands. And he said, no, I'm not going to do it. And that's why. He didn't say, no, you can't do it near an election. He said, in that circumstance, it is not generally done. And now this is a different circumstance, right? The people have entrusted the Senate to the Republicans, and they've entrusted the presidency to the Republicans, and so they have a duty to do it, and they're going to do it.
And they ran specifically. I want to remind people that the Republican Senate ran specifically in 2018 on the Brett Kavanaugh fiasco. So their majority expanded. Now, that is not a national vote, but it is a vote by states as a whole for the people who, exclusive of the House, vote on judges, and they affirmed the Senate Majority Leader's approach.
Yeah. And that's a big job. We were talking in the break. It matters because in a deeply divided nation, the Supreme Court is more powerful than it is at other times. At other times, the Congress can mess with it. That's specifically what they're proposing to do, many Democrats at least, put more people on the court. But they can also, the Congress, if the president will sign it, by ordinary legislation, can remove whole subject matter from
Yep.
the Supreme Court.
Yep.
That means if they said the Supreme Court may not make any more judgments about abortion, they couldn't do it, right? But the interesting thing is, and this is your point, those things have not been done in American history because the Constitution is understood to be a settled thing of practices that govern how we go about deciding policy. And if you mess with the form of the government, you're messing in a more fundamental way than deciding, what the policy is about abortion.
And that's what I would call the natural law of unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. And they usually aren't good, Dr. Arnn.
No.
No. Larry Arnn, it is always a pleasure. Visit Hillsdale.edu, America. I just told him during the break, I think Hillsdale is going to be swamped with applications this year. So apply early. It doesn't help to apply often. It's not like voting. Just apply once, but spend your time on the essay. They actually read them at Hillsdale.edu. And come right back. The Senate leader, Mitch McConnell, joins me next on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening. I'm standing by for the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell. I don't believe he's joined it yet. So we will, in the meantime, remind you, spend this weekend organizing. Get out the vote. Keep America. America.com is a project of the Job Creators Network. SenateLeadershipFund.org. SenateLeadershipFund.org is where you can go to contribute to the PAC that Leader McConnell directs to keep the Republican majority intact, operating, functioning, and effectively governing the United States Senate. And so I think if you don't know where to spend your money and you want to spend your money and you're a Republican, that's where I would give the money. It's like people, if you're a Democrat and you want the Democrats to win, I would give it to Chuck Schumer. But I know that Republicans who are the smartest Republicans give to Senate leadership fund.org, and they do so all the time. Job creation number was a good one. The unemployment in the United States has dropped to 6.9%. That is the news of the morning, in addition to the fact that President and the First Lady have tested positive, but the United States, for the virus, and we pray for them, but the United States added 661,000 jobs in the United States last night. Unemployment dropped to 7.9%. That is terrific news. Now, the stock market today will be shaky because they will be alarmed by the president's health. He's fine as of last night. I expect he's doing an event at noon today. It won't end the debates. I hope he recovers quickly, like Ambassador O'Brien, my friend who's the national security advisor. I spoke with him at the beginning of his time with COVID and during it and afterwards, and I've seen him since. And it's uncomfortable. It's a feverish sort of thing. It's fatigue mostly and some aches. But mild case is what we hope the president has, and even milder. Some people don't feel anything. And it will be transparent, as the president's health always has to be transparent. But do say a prayer for the First Lady as well, and for Barron Trump. I'm impressed by a couple of the president's opponents wishing him well. I'm joined now by the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell. Good morning, Mr. Leader. Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Great to have you.
Good morning, Hugh. Glad to be with you.
Have you spoken to the president since his diagnosis of the COVID virus?
No, I haven't. But it certainly underscores that the coronavirus is not concerned about the American election, because and that it's not going away until we get a vaccine. And we're, of course, as you know, pursuing a vaccine with a Manhattan Project type focus.
Okay. I wish him well from everyone when you do talk to him. I'm sure that will be today. We have done a lot of interviews, Mr. Leader, in the last 2 weeks with 17 members of your caucus, because I think this may be the most important month for the United States Constitution in years. Do you agree with the importance given the nomination of Judge Barrett to the Constitution of this month?
I absolutely do, and you know that you and I both agree that the most significant long-lasting accomplishment of the last 4 years with the president, coupled with this Republican majority in the Senate, has been putting people on, young men and women on the bench who believe in the quaint notion that maybe a job of judge is to actually follow the law. Now we have an opportunity to put another Supreme Court justice in place. We've done 53 circuit judges and a total of over 200 to the federal judiciary that I think will reap benefits for the American people for decades to come.
Will Judge Barrett receive a vote on the floor before the election, Leader McConnell?
Well, the plan is for the nomination to come out of committee on October the 22nd, as Chairman Lindsey Graham has indicated. And we will be voting on the nominee very soon. I haven't picked an exact point to bring the nomination up, but it's front and center for the American people. And as we move ahead, I'll be more specific about the precise time for consideration on the floor.
If they are resolved, is there any way, if you want to have the nominee voted on, is there any way that you cannot have enough time given Democratic obstruction?
No, I think we can move forward. Our biggest enemy, obviously, is what we were talking about at the beginning of the interview, the coronavirus, keeping everybody healthy and well and in place to do our job.
Should the hearing be conducted remotely? Should the room be kept relatively uncrowded if, in fact, the Senate Judiciary Committee convenes at the instruction of Senator Graham?
Yeah, they've been careful already. The members, some of them have, I think, done their interviews in previous hearings remotely. This sort of underscores, I think, the need to do that. And I think every precaution needs to be taken because we don't anticipate any Democratic support at all, either in committee or in the full Senate. And therefore, everybody needs to be in an all-hands-on-deck mindset.
Is any member of the Senate, Democrat or Republican, to your knowledge, do they have the virus?
Well, we don't know. But, you know, it can sneak up on you, as it obviously did with the president and the first lady. So we're being very careful and keeping an eye on everyone.
Right. Is the FBI full field background, which was conducted for Judge Barrett in 2017, updated yet?
I think so. Chairman Graham and the committee could answer that. I think so.
All right. With Justice Thomas and then 2 years ago with Justice Kavanaugh, the Judiciary Committee completed their proceedings and then had to reopen them. I'm of the opinion that the chairman, Senator Graham, ought to begin the hearings with a firm declaration that once they close, they will stay closed. Do you agree with me?
I believe that, you know, unless there's some completely intervening event like we experienced in Kavanaugh, that the chairman has indicated the hearings will start on October the 12th, and they'll go over a three-day period, I believe it is, and then the nominee will come out of committee.
Now,
on the 22nd.
Do you expect the cable networks or anybody in broadcast to give a would-be Michael Avenatti the same kind of access to distort and lie as he was granted in the last round?
Well, that was a bizarre experience, a horrible experience for Judge Kavanaugh, and I was proud of my members for fighting their way through it. But let's look at the nominee. This is a woman who's led an extraordinary life. She's got seven children, two of them adopted, one with special needs. An outstanding, she's led an incredibly outstanding life with a wonderful family. We don't anticipate any kind of unanticipated event that could throw us off schedule.
Now, in my opinion, Senator, four members of the Judiciary Committee have violated Article 6, which bans religious tests in the past. Senator Feinstein, when she asked or when she said the dogma lives loudly within you. Senator Durbin, who is himself a Catholic, when he asked Judge Barrett if she was an Orthodox Catholic. Senator Hirono, when she responded no to a question, is religion off the table? And Senator Harris, in fact, I want to quote Tony Gutierrez from The America magazine, that's the magazine of the Jesuits, on August 20th of this year, quote, Senator Harris's questioning of Brian Boucher during his confirmation hearing for a federal judgeship also raises questions among Catholics, especially the Knights of Columbus, of which I have been a member for 15 years. Senator Harris, along with Hawaii Senator Mazie Hirono, questioned Mr. Boucher's ability to serve impartially based on his membership of the Knights. Do you think your colleagues violated Article 6 in these instances?
I do. I think this is the single biggest issue in the confirmation of Judge Barrett. Discrimination against people of religion was on full display. I think our colleagues on the other side need to be reminded there is no religious test for public service in America, none whatsoever. And I think the questions indicate a bias against people of faith as if they somehow can't carry out their jobs objectively. Well, Judge Barrett has previously sworn to uphold the Constitution. There is no religious test, and I think this is totally out of bounds, and we'll be talking about that a good bit during the confirmation process.
Have you discussed with Chairman Graham gaveling down as out of order unconstitutional questions?
I haven't. I have every confidence that Chairman Graham will be able to handle this process skillfully and efficiently.
Now, some very smart people who I respect and I know you do, George Will, Jonah Goldberg among them, have proposed, instead of a confirmation, a deal. And these are wise people. They want to do a deal that would have you agree with the Democrats. We won't move Judge Barrett if you agree not to change the filibuster. I personally believe that's an unconstitutional condition of a future legislature. But what's your reaction to the Will Goldberg proposal?
A terrible idea. They've been, look, these threats to filibuster, the district and Puerto Rico, the state, and to pack the Supreme Court predate the Barrett nomination. They were already threatening to do this. So you couldn't believe them if we agreed to delay the nominee. We don't intend to delay the consideration.
I'm glad to hear that. Let me, a side note. Have you considered increasing security for judges after the attack on a federal judge? And I mean, this is a crazy time we're living on. Is there in any phase four provision for increasing security and maybe pay for judges as the Chief Justice repeatedly asked for?
As you can imagine, Hugh, we never discuss security issues publicly.
All right. That's a well put. If as I expect, Judge Barrett becomes Justice Barrett, there will be a vacancy on the Seventh Circuit. White House Deputy Counsel Kate Todd would be wonderful. But if she or anyone is nominated to replace Judge Barrett, will there be enough time to confirm that successor before the end of this Congress, raising your record number of appeals court judges to 54?
I would hope so. You know, I pledge to the American people to leave no vacancy behind. No vacancies at the moment for the first time in 40 years. I'd like to be able to still keep that pledge. And so we hope to move forward with a nominee if we get one rapidly from the White House.
Let me ask you about Senator Harris. She has blocked judges for California. I used to live there. People like Rick Richmond, who's just a big firm litigator, a wonderful lawyer. He's not particularly political, extremely competent. But she hasn't allowed a number of these judges to move forward so that justice can function in California. Ought that to be an issue in considering her as vice president?
Well, it's interesting. You know, in a state where you have two Democratic senators, the only way you can move forward at the district court level is to basically make a deal. And typically what the White House does, so you take so many and I take so many, and they divide them up. I think that's probably what's happened in California. At the circuit court level, as you know, we view that as a presidential prerogative and not something senators can blackball. So if the person you're suggesting you're concerned about was the nominee for district court, yeah, that's probably why that person didn't go forward.
Well, I really do think she ought to be criticized about that, but especially she and the former vice president ought to be criticized for not answering the question about packing the court.
Look, Hugh, on that, when they don't answer the question, and you know what the answer is. The answer is yes. They pull in. A good reason why we shouldn't allow the Democrats to get control of the Senate or the White House.
I've explained, but maybe you should. Why is packing the court so radical? Why did not even FDR get it through a democratically controlled, I believe, a supermajority at the time? Why is that so destabilizing to the Republic, Senator McConnell?
Well, let me quote the late, great Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was asked that last year, and she said 9 is a good number.
And
she also referred to the court packing episode in the 30s and how that was a mistake.
Is the push for D.C. statehood, in your view, unconstitutional? I believe it is because of the obvious presumption that it would not be a state. But do you think it's unconstitutional?
I don't know. I hope we don't get to that point. As you know, the House of Representatives has already passed D.C. statehood. Every Democrat except one voted for it. If they were to get control of the Senate, I think they would try to put that on the president's desk, particularly if they abolish the filibuster, which they intend to do. Another good reason for me to be the majority leader next year and not Chuck Schumer.
Let me now turn to a couple of political questions, Mr. Leader. The president has condemned white supremacy often, the KKK. He did it again last night. He continues to be asked about it. Are the questions in good faith, in your opinion?
Oh, you know, it's a shame that after all these years, we're still accusing each other of racist. I think a good quick answer for any politician is that white supremacy is abhorrent, unacceptable, and anybody asked should condemn it in the strongest possible way.
All right. We have discussed many times on the show your commitment to the Constitution, and I'm hoping that the McConnell judges will revive the prohibition against the taking of property without compensation. I hope Chevron deference will be overturned. Do you have any particular area where you hope the courts evolve quickly?
Well, I agree with you on all of those issues. We never know for sure how judges are going to rule. The founders were correct in giving them a lifetime appointment. All you can do is hope for the best, and I think the records of these 53 circuit judges and these two and now soon three Supreme Court justices indicate a strong adherence to the Constitution, and hopefully we'll see that reflected in the years to come as they live out their lifetime appointments and protect the Constitution and the laws of the United States in perpetuity.
Just a couple more questions about Judge Barrett. She's been called a generational talent. You have sat down with her. You've talked with her. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously don't know her all that well, but everybody I know who does know her say she is a generational talent. And, you know, I'm kind of pleased to finally have somebody on the Supreme Court who didn't go to Harvard or Yale.
Amen. I'm a Michigan lawyer. Yeah, amen. Finally, you know, we do have law schools that do not have Ivy League before them. Is she Scalia smart? Is she Ginsburg sweet?
You know, I don't know who gets this, which sweet. I believe Justice Gorsuch is in Scalia's office at the moment. I don't know how they assign offices over there.
No, I meant nice. Judge Ginsburg was very, very nice to me when I was a clerk on the D.C. Circuit, and I think Scalia is the smartest judge I've ever met. Is she smart and nice?
Oh, yeah. You know, an A-plus personality. Everybody who's come in contact with her over the years absolutely loves and respects her. Yeah, you may have seen the op-ed in the Washington Post by one of her professors years ago at law school who said she was the single best student he ever had.
And a last question about the debates, Leader McConnell. What did you make of the debate? And if the president is still recovering, could they conduct the next debate virtually? I don't want them not to have it. We've got to have these individuals. And Joe Biden especially has to be asked about the Supreme Court again and again and again. What do you think about what happened on Tuesday night and going forward?
Well, it wasn't exactly Lincoln Douglas, and I think the public would be better served and both candidates would be better served by more respectful exchanges. I hope we see that in the next debate, and I agree with you. I think it should go forward. Hopefully the president feels up to it, and, you know, they can work this out remotely. We're doing an awful lot of things remotely these days because of the coronavirus. Hopefully they'll be able to do this as well.
Last question is political. The SenateLeadershipFund.org is where people give money if they want you to be deploying resources at the end. How does the control of the Senate look to you right now? I think the SenateLeadershipFund.org is where people ought to be sending resources so that you have them at your disposal to deploy. What does the map look like to you right now? Do you think it is going to remain a Republican-controlled Senate?
Well, I think it's 50-50. We always knew this was going to be a challenging cycle because we had such a good year 2 years ago, and we have close, hard-fought races all over the country in Montana, Colorado, Arizona, Iowa, North Carolina, Maine. And the Democrats are competing with us in Kansas and Georgia and even South Carolina. So the American people have a big decision to make. Do they want to hand the Senate over to people who want to pack the Supreme Court, admit two new states, and blow up the procedures in the Senate? I think this is a big, big election. If I'm the majority leader, none of those things are going to happen.
Leader McConnell, thank you for joining me again. I hope we talk again before the election. You're going to win handily in Kentucky, but I know you've got quite a map to face. I appreciate the time this morning. Thank you, Leader.
Thank you.
HughHewitt.com, where the transcript will go. Come back Monday, America. Thank you, Adam and Dwayne. Thank you, Ben and Harley. Talk to you Monday, America. Pray for the president and the first lady.